Hello, and welcome to the WIP 12 podcast. I'm your host, Jordan, or Obiscus, and today I'm joined by Greg, RetroXUS on the Discords. I don't know how to pronounce his ITS name. He can say that himself. He's a active member of, I guess, the larger Ontario meta, and we've faced off a few times. So welcome to the podcast, Greg, and thanks for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So today we're going to be chatting about our experience at a local event that both of us attended. The interesting thing about the event was that it was using the new Reinforcements Extra. So we'll kind of go through our thoughts in the lead up to, and I guess after the event, with preparing for Reinforcements event and our thoughts about Reinforcements. I played Shock Army and Greg played Assassin Baram. So we'll maybe a bit more discussion on the Pano and Hakislam Reinforcements. But before we do that, let's find out a little bit about you, Greg. So can you introduce yourself?
Yeah, so as you already know, Greg and RetroXUS on the Discords. How would I put this? I'm relatively new to the Infinity community. It's been about a year of me playing in events and actually playing weekly with people locally. I'm someone that loves to spend a lot of time sitting down and hobbying in one way, shape, or form. If it's coming up with a new idea for an army that I'm not going to paint for another 6 or 7 months, or trying to remember the colors I used for the last army I painted when I add a new miniature to it. I spend a good amount of my free time hanging out and doing that. But yeah, outside of Infinity, I try to stay active. I love playing things like volleyball. I got into kendo recently, so that's fun. But yeah, that's not the fun and important stuff that everyone wants to hear about.
Oh, that's always fun and exciting. You know, things beyond Infinity and hobbying is always good to know. But how were you introduced to Infinity? You said you got in relatively recently.
Yeah, so my first introduction to Infinity was actually, it was before when I got super involved. So a good friend of mine, Chase, actually introduced me to Infinity in our small gaming group that we play in. And I loved it for the models right away. But after, especially at the time, I had just picked up, I got out of X-Wing. That was the first miniature war game I played. Started into Kings of War briefly, and started to dive into War Machine. And jumping into Infinity while learning War Machine and not having that much experience kind of threw me for a little bit of a loop, because I didn't have any wargaming background. So I kind of backed away from it really quickly and ran away screaming. Mm-hmm. But eventually I started to talk about wanting to play in Star Wars Legion tournaments down the road. And I talked about the difficulty of finding a tournament for that. And Chase piped up in our group that there was an Infinity tournament coming up, and he would be glad to run me through a few rounds before the tournament came up so I could play in it. And I just kind of threw all caution to the wind and said, yeah, I'll do that. What models do I need to buy now? So, yeah, I dove in, and I think that was a couple, when I started to dive in a lot, that was maybe 2 or 3 months before the TAC awareness, what was it called? The makeup event. So the one where unfortunately they couldn't host it at the Legion. So there's only a few people that went out, which I think was good for me to experience as a firsthand jump into Infinity. But after that, I just hit the ground running.
I think that would have been, was it Winter War? I think. So it was Winter War, I think, the second one. Because I think it was.
So I think I missed the Winter War. And the one I
no,
was
no, it was
in...
Summer Siege.
Yes, Summer Siege was
It was the Winter War, Summer Siege, and then Spring Offensive.
Yes. Yeah. Those are the two that I Two? Yes, it's only two, I think.
Yes.
Oh, my brain hurts now. It's been a very, very long
You went to the
little
second and third
one.
Tackleware, and I know you've been to a few of the Toronto
But that's me.
events.
Yes, yeah. I've come to a couple of those.
But it sounds like Chase's perseverance is the real reason you got and stayed in the game.
Yeah, he got me in. Honestly, I lucked out in that here in Stratford, there's a family that they kind of live, breathe, sleep Infinity, and they were willing to have, if not one game a week with me, two or three games a week. And that really like pushed me ahead in my learning of, oh, so these are the different ways that I can either die or be hacked or be surprised off the field. So it was really good to get a lot of reps in. And I think between the fact that Infinity is like the communities I've experienced are all such welcoming communities, the amount of reps that I was able to get in and just everyone really being encouraging at all points in time, like that really solidified this as the game that I want to really spend my time and money on.
Yeah, that and that makes sense. I know the community's always been one of the main draws for me. And you already talked about the models, which another it's traditionally another one of Infinity's big selling points. So which factions do you play?
So I started out heavy into, I'd like to say vanilla Yu Ching, only because I didn't know what sectorials were when I first started. I jumped into ISS for a little bit, mostly because I loved Quang Chi's and also the Sujian. Just having a robo murder kitty sounds like a lot of fun. I happened to pick up quite a few Hack Islam models after my first tournament, so I jumped into Dash Hat for a little bit. That was fun, but I think Yu Jing called me back fully. I ended up playing every last year. I ended up playing every single sectorial with a heavy focus on IA towards the end. Just after experiencing a few of the different things that all the sectorials focused on, something about the pure heavy core with Shang Ji, Zhu Yang, and then throwing Bixi in there to round it out, just it kind of made me feel happy. And then I was I stumbled upon the Lujing drop troops, and well, they kind of sealed the deal for me, loving that sectorial.
You have a bit of a reputation for, embracing the 3 to 4Lujings at times. So, and I know the first time you and I played in an event, it was you were just leaning fully into the biggest of boys, the double Guija, double Moeng, but.
That was a fun little list that let's just say I didn't do them justice. They did not perform how they needed to.
So are there so you seem to be spending a lot played a lot of Yuzhang, you have some Hak Islam. Are there any is there anything particular you're looking at trying in the future?
So I did say for ITS 15 I would bounce between the different Hack Islam sectorials. I am looking a little bit into QK right now, but something about the Coom Riders in Vanilla Hack is making me really want to jump there. So that's kind of my bigger focus. I am also starting to paint some Bakunin, because again, same Chase and I are going to try an escalation league between the two of us where we just jump into a faction that we really haven't played a lot of. So I thought dipping my toes in Nomads would be interesting because they've scared me off the board quite a number of times. But Bakunin seemed to be the one I really wanted to try out.
Yeah, they're definitely cool, and now they have all those I think they got some of those new monster-y creatures from the newest manga book, right?
Yeah, the Zellenkriegers are joining them. As well as the one model that they still have not released that I really want to see is the Daemonist, which it looks like a great lieutenant on paper. Well, not great. It has a lot of drawbacks, but I
It
just
looks
think the
fun.
idea of a priest-like model with a demon standing next to him on a base would look really, really interesting on the table.
Yeah, and I feel like they showed the dossier art for it, and it looked pretty cool.
They did, and I was with the dossier art. I like that it made the demon look similar size, if not a little bit bigger than the priest. But it's interesting because everything else that has guard is like a canine type or like some sort of animal, small animal companion. But with this, it
No,
seems like
that's
nope.
not. No, it seems like it's
This is
going more
the
the alpha in O12.
oh yes,
The
Alpha's
guard is
part.
the Sock'em Bock'em robot that
I
just
forgot
is
about
like the
that
same
part.
size. So it looks like it's more
Oh,
along those lines
that line,
than.
yeah.
Now, my alpha
I really
has
need to
two
dive into
raptors
O12.
instead of a
Oh,
robot, but. But
yeah,
yeah, it does look
I
like they're
don't get to
going
play
that
around
route.
with O12 that much. Yeah, I need to either get beat by them a bit more or start collecting them a bit and playing them.
Next time we play, I'll make sure to bring them out for you then.
It was it O12 or Starmada that you brought to the one Takuary? It was that one army. I loved the paint job you did on
That was
it.
my Starmada. I was playing Starmada. That was at the Spring Offensive. I was playing Starmada. I still haven't really gotten into playing vanilla O12 yet in person. That's just because I need to paint up more models, and I find it easier to, when I'm starting a new area, just paint up a sector stuff for a sectorial, just a more limited list of models rather than figuring out how to jump around between a full vanilla faction's worth.
I think that's one thing that I switched to halfway through ITS 14 was I'm gonna paint up lists in my faction because I started out by just every Yujing model I had, I would just put it and I'd start painting it, and then another one I'd start painting it, and then eventually I'd come tournament time, I'd be like, well, I had six models painted for this list. So yeah, I think subsectioning what I paint and even focusing on sectorial by sectorial for painting is going to help me this season along for sure.
Yeah, and even if you just like write out have like the bare template of a few lists and be like, okay, I'm gonna paint for these lists, and then when events come around, being like, okay, I have the bulk of the thing. Maybe I have another model I want to add into the specific, lists I want to bring to the event. Definitely helps with actually getting the painting done. Because before we move on, the other thing that's exciting, I guess, coming for Bakkanen is I believe they're getting the lizards getting has been is getting redone soon. We just haven't seen it yet.
I cannot wait for that. Like, don't get me wrong, as much as everybody hates the old sculpt, I think that's one of the old sculpts that I actually like. It's just so weird.
It definitely has a lot of character. I hope that the new lizard looks like they take the old lizard and just, modernize it so it, has an interesting pose. But I personally I agree. I would love to see it keep the, not having like a big gun, just having weird claw hands with guns built into them. I don't know if they'll do that, but it would be really cool if they did.
Yeah, they seem to be going the route of more making a lot of the tags kind of have a similar look to them and then build off of that. But
The stigmata
I like the
branched
weird.
off. The stigmata was a pretty fair branch off.
Yeah, that one was a good branch off. And I mean, like, it's a different it would be nice if they went the same route for the lizard. And I'm not sure about Nomads, but who else? What other sectorials can use the lizard?
I believe it's just Bakkanen. I don't think any of the NA2s get it. I think the only. I think in NA2, I think only like the iguana gets out of
Okay.
nomads. So
So then that might be it might be interesting for them to like really flavor it to how they're flavoring the new Hakkonen stuff. Like really give it that same feel would be nice.
Yeah, I think it'd be really cool. Although Bakkonen always has that, drawn two directions thing of, you have your nuns and then you have your crazy monsters. So it'll be interesting to see if it bridges the gap or if it leans one way or the other. I think if it leaned towards the monsters, it would make sense because the nuns already have their stigmata as their like the tag that looks more like their faction or
So,
sub-faction.
like a furry tag?
It doesn't need to have be furry, but has that still that animalistic claw type thing.
No, I agree. I agree. Is it? It would be nice to give it that that other side, and it a tie-in with things like the Uber Falks and Brandon Castro, stuff like that.
Yeah. Okay. So with that, I think we can probably move into, I guess, the main topic of today's episode, which is us kind of going through the path to this event and our thoughts behind it and reinforcements. So quickly, for the sake of the listeners, it was this one day event, three missions with reinforcements extra in place. So the day started with evacuation. Because we're masochists, I guess, to play evacuation with reinforcements, mind wipe, and then closed it off with supplies. So, all three of these missions can be fairly order intensive, evacuation especially. You have five civilians you're fighting over, and then additionally two enemy HVTs that you're trying to evacuate. You need to pass whip checks to pick the civilians up and whip checks to launch them off the board. So order intensive. Mind wipe, yeah, press a button and then get across the board and break servers. Also can be quite order intensive. Supplies can be less order intensive. You can grab the boxes fairly easily and then run away with them. But what were your, I guess, overall thoughts when you first saw this lineup and started considering what type of list you were going to bring, and then, how you were going to approach these considering reinforcements?
So when it came to list building, I think the reinforcements part was what jumped out at me first. And I first thought, okay, if I'm going to develop a reinforcements pool, what do I want that pool to come in and do? Thinking every time that ideally I want this pool coming in on turn three because everything else on the field is doing a job and killing. I didn't want to, I kind of early on said I don't want too many sacrificial pieces. And then as I started to list build, I realized, oh, I have quite a few pieces that are attempting to either trade or just go up and try to cause some noise.
Yeah,
So,
you're Hassassins. I think some trading is expected.
some trading is definitely intended with them. first I was trying to think of what did I want that order pool to come in and do, and for some reason, I like the weird gimmicks that you can get, and with the Hack Islam reinforcements, the at least for me, one of the weirdest gimmicks that popped out is a linked four burst chain rifle. And I just thought, okay, if I'm gonna lean into this, what am I gonna do? And I experimented through, do I want two of them running on together? Do I want to have one and then bring in another Corsan that's gonna be throwing grenades or something like that? But after a while I settled on, well, bringing the Azrael in and having the Azrael kind of be come in and try to clean up quite a few things, and then having my Sekhban come in with two Corsans of different flavors, and either going in and trying to clear out other pieces and trading or sitting somewhere to attempt to interfere with an objective. When it came to the building of the lists, I had a lot of trouble because just assassins were such a departure from my usual pure heavy core marching around doing a lot of the work. And I in a lot of the practice games I had leading up to the tournament, I quickly found out that I had to play assassins differently. And I didn't lean into Daylamis until, oh my goodness, probably 2 to 3 weeks before the tournament. I had just completely ignored them. I don't know why. So
You're trying to be
they became,
different. You're
I wanted to be different, but then I realized that my amount of different didn't really work, and I kind of had to lean into what Assassins does, at least a little bit. And
That
I
makes sense.
realized that whatever list I built, I wanted to have some flavor of Daylami interference on the field. I actually reached out to, I don't know if it was the Infinity community online on Facebook or it was the Assassins group on Facebook, but I reached out to say, hey, like, what do you guys do to build your Assassins lists? Like, give me some flavors. And the one list I got that stood out was completely opposite to something that I had, it was identical to something that I had ran away from after my first game as Assassins. Because my first game of Assassins, I went, oh, impersonation seems cool. I'm going to throw all three of them up there to see what they do. And because I didn't know how to use them or how to move them around, it really like it broke me down really quickly. I kind of gave up on going all out with fidés. I thought maybe one fidé here to do a little bit of interference and add in. But again, after looking at this list, I thought I would try it, and I think I made a couple changes to it, but that is one of the lists that I adopted was a list with two fidés and Aljabelle standing out on their line. Just kind of covering anything that in case I go second, it's not just the Daylamis that are standing up there waiting to rapidly fire a Panzerfaust if whatever comes around the corner.
So
But yeah.
I have your two lists in front of me. I
Okay.
might as well read them out. I might read them out for listeners just so they have an idea, and I'll link them
Okay.
in case people want to look at them. Was there one? Were they when you were for your two lists? Was one envisioned for any particular mission, or were they meant to be more
The two, I
generalist?
believe the two lists I had were the reinforcements, I guess, which is the one that I was given to tinker with, and then reinforcement wipers.
Wipers was
So
for mind wipe.
yeah, I and funny enough, I didn't use it for mind wipe. But I built this list after like going into my practice game for mind wipe, thinking I wanted something that I could hold back, that could kind of step on and do some work whenever I needed them later on. And that's, I fell in love with the Boktar a long time ago, but every match I use them in.
Just doesn't do it.
Yeah, so it wasn't really doing what it needed to do at its costage. And really, I found myself cutting it out of a lot of lists. So I told myself with this, I really wanted to just force myself to bring the Boktar and see what it can do.
So did you pl end up playing both lists?
I did. I
Okay.
did.
So why don't I read them out, and then we can, when we get into the missions, we can kind of figure out, say when you what you used which ones for and all that. So the first list, so the reinforcement wipers, you have Yara Hadad with the strategic deployment and her nice AP marksman. You have the Ghulam Comlink, because you had to, with +2, which I am jealous of. The +2, getting two extra models is always really nice. The Ghulam NCO with a grenade launcher and smoke grenade launcher, an Asawir lieutenant with an AP rifle, a Bereed killer hacker with Trinity minus 3 in a pitcher because they're insanely good for 15 points. McMurrow, because McMurrow, a single fidé with a double action close combat weapon, a Boktar paramedic, parachutist NCO with boarding shotgun plus one burst and D charges, okay? And then a regular Ghulam. And then you have a second combat group of two Delami with light shotgun, Panzerfaust, and camo, and a jammer chain rifle mutt. Your reinforcements group was a Sekhban specialist with AP rifle light shotgun, one Korsan with plus two burst chain rifle, which they're such a gross profile, a Korsan with an SMG and plus one burst grenades, and then an Azrael with a heavy shotgun plus one burst. So that's your first list. Your second list, reinforcements, I guess. This is the one you're saying that was inspired by some stuff. You were talking with some people online. Starts with an Asawir AP Spitfire. You have the same Ghulam comlink, because, again, you have no choice. You have that nice Breed Killer Hacker. You have a Ghulam Lieutenant with plus one command token, which these days with the O12 Prestige is just really nice to have those extra command tokens. Ghulam Doctor, Algebel, two Fidays with double action close combat weapons, and McMurrow. Four Delamis in the second group with light shotgun Panzerfausts. And then this one has a reinforcement group of an Azrael with an AP Spitfire, a Sekhban Doctor, and then two of those Korsans with the plus burst, plus two burst chain rifles. These both seem pretty nasty. The idea of Azrael's coming in with AP Spitfires or heavy shotguns with plus burst is horrifying. Just before we go, I guess, into, you know, so how the event went for you and what your experience was with the reinforcements, I'm just gonna give a bit of my thoughts with my lists. I think we haven't talked too much about Pano reinforcements yet on the podcast. So I was playing Shock Army. My experience going into it, I had tried games with reinforcements, one game in particular in Evacuation, where I just found there just were not enough orders on the board to do anything. I had started building my list with, you know, the reinforcements, you know, a nice squad of four guys. Hopefully they come in soon enough to do stuff. But was finding that only having 12 guys on the field to start and often not coming in until turn three with the others, I just wasn't getting stuff done in reinforcements. And then I was finding the traditional issue Shock Army and Pano has, which is if you don't have a good solid gun to put heads down, you can't get to objectives because you don't have smoke or any other real tricks to get around it. So I quickly abandoned my original lists and went for the idea of I need to keep a tag in Shock Army, and I want as many orders on the field to start as possible, which means having as small of a reinforcement group as possible. Luckily, Pano reinforcements have a very solid tag, and both of my lists essentially lean into the idea of my reinforcement group has two models, but those two models effectively have four or five orders between them. So when they come in, they can still get stuff done. I only use 87 to 90 points of my reinforcements. So, you know, less of my things have to die before they come in. But it meant that I had more orders on the field for the first one or two rounds. But in all three of my games, it ended up being that I got my reinforcements turn two, which I'll kind of talk to later. But so I'll quickly run through my lists. So the first list, which was my evacuation list that I used also for supplies, had a Teke Balon, duoing with a Knight of Montessa until the Montessa picked up a civilian and would run away. Then I had a core link of a regular sapper sniper, a regular lieutenant, a regular decoy lieutenant, a regular paramedic, a regular with triangulated fire, and mine there, and then my regular comlink, and then a war core. And then the second group was a second Knight Montessa. Both Montessas were paramedics because I wanted fast specialists, a trauma doc, and then three Fugazis. And then the reinforcements pool was a Squallow Mark II with NCO, so effectively three usable orders on that model, because I don't use my lieutenant order on the regular because he's hanging out in a core link and hiding. And then a Blade Op with Blade Op Engineer that had tactical awareness. So again, two orders from that, plus the ability to fix tags, including, you know, my other tag that was on the field. And if that other tag goes down and pretty much one other thing goes down, that's enough for reinforcements to come in. They can drop in and then heal the tag. My second list was very similar, but was designed to play out the mind wipes. So its first group is two Knight Montessa paramedics, like just being fast specialists that also have the ability to break the consoles because they have double action close combat weapons, decent phys, and martial arts. A similar core link of a regular sapper sniper, a regular lieutenant, a regular decoy lieutenant. It's the exact same core. A regular paramedic, the mine layer, and then the comm link. So it's actually a six-man of regulars, letting me, when the reinforcements come in, switch that comm link over for free. And then the war core. And then this time, the second group is a Dragao, three Fugazi, and a mule bot. So again, both the lists are very much, you know, I have a tag that's a big gun. I have two Montessas to do objectives. I have a core link to kind of do some arrow fire. And then just a bunch of garbage that generate orders and provide some flash pulse arrows. This time the reinforcement pool is pretty much identical. It's the same Squallow NCO, but I swapped out the Blade Ops for Shona Carano. The Blade Ops does have a decharge, so could break the consoles, but I wanted to try Shona Carano and her sword of instant death. the worst thing I find with Shona Carano is, you know, when she's up against someone else and, you know, she needs to hit them. But when you're hitting a defenseless console, you don't need to worry about that, in which case the damage 18 AP explosive just kind of does the trick.
That's what it needs to.
Yeah. So those are my list. The idea, again, it was very much, okay, I just need orders to do objectives, and I need a big gun in the form of a tag to put heads down. Which kind of, for me, found, at least for Shock Army, definitely seemed like the way I would do reinforcements in the future, because if you start having, you know, four models in your reinforcements, when they're stuck out for too much of the game, now the rest of your army doesn't have the orders to do things, and when you're kind of relying on using guns to put heads down, I find a lot of times you need an order or two more than if you're doing the, I'll just, you know, impetuous throw smoke on an objective, then run up and press it, because, you know, you need to assume that you aren't going to put the head down immediately with the first shot. So now we can kind of talk about how the event went for you. So first evacuation. Which of your two lists did you run, and what was your opponent?
So I ran the reinforcements, I guess, list, the two Fidei Elchbell.
Yep.
My opponent was Nomad. I believe he was running Corregidor. Pretty sure. Yeah, I'm pretty sure he was Corregidor.
Okay.
I can't recall. All I know is it's Nomads. Nomads has this tendency to, whenever I see Nomads on the table, I kind of glaze over and a fear sets in.
Yeah, and our local does have a bunch of Nomad players. You see them a lot.
Yeah, yeah. I actually my first opponent was a Kitchener local, Eric. He came. Him and I actually came down together, and we ended up getting paired up in the first round.
As it goes.
Yeah, yeah. It's usually how it goes. I think when I do come to Sword and Board, I think it's Chris I usually get paired with first round every tournament. So I needed a little change while he wasn't there. So
yeah.
But yeah. So I ended up going first. I won the roll off. Decided to take the initiative and say I was going to take the first turn. It was a mission that I think I personally, I got into my old ways of getting really kill happy. I overpushed myself in many ways and really didn't realize until turn three that I hadn't picked up any of the HVTs or civilians.
So oh wow, you were just killing.
I was just having too much fun trying to kill or set up traps. At some point in time, I did have to dig myself out. He had a McMurro come down and like just bear down on top of my five-man core, and I didn't want to put any of them up against him just yet.
Yeah.
I mean, if he did step in on reactive, I could put a lot of shotgun templates on him just to see what happens, but I didn't really want to lose them all that quickly. So unfortunately, when my reinforcements came in, they were in the best position to try to move the HVT and get them into the console. So I really kind of threw a bit of that game for myself there, because I had a good chance to grab quite a few of the HVTs turn two.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I
the went red haze.
The red haze of I need to make sure Nomads doesn't do much to me. I mean, my first order other than the Impetuous was to killer hack, set up and killer hack. I can't remember, was it Jazz?
Yeah, Kregador, it would be Jazz, probably.
Jazz, yeah. Jazz was sitting off to the corner, and I had to make sure that she was taken out so my Asawira could start making moves up. And I and ended up forgetting that there could have been a hidden deploy hacker, which, not hidden deploy, camp out hacker, which there was sitting right there. So Asawira almost got destroyed on that, but was able to save his skin. But yeah, I ended up... I think I ended up winning that one 3-2 in the end. It was a good game, definitely a good game. A lot of lessons learned on both sides, I would say. I had some nice chats with Eric after that game.
Yeah, it sounds like a good. I find evacuation can easily do that, right? You lose sight of the objectives, and then it's very quick to fall behind.
Yeah, and I mean, with evacuation, really, if you spend the first little bit of your turn to secure 2 points, there's usually two civilians pretty close to where you can just extract them.
Yeah.
But you tend to leave yourself way too open if you just spend the orders to get those off right away rather than save them for the end of the game when you just pull them off. In time, so it's always a nice balance. Every time I play, I think I've played it once or twice before the tournament, and the last time I played it, it was a very similar, I wouldn't say it was a similar outcome, because I got blown away and that time I played it, but it was a matter of I tried to get up the field, and because I couldn't advance any further, I ended up having to double back and then try to extract at that point in time.
Yeah.
Really that push to get their HVTs from their half back down, or if you're strong enough for it, from their half into their own console. that's the play it seems that a lot of people tend to go for early, but
yeah.
Doesn't always work out.
Yeah, in some ways it feels like And looking at, I'm just pulled up the OTM to see the scores. It's relatively low scoring. I feel like a lot of the time it comes down to the civilians are the easiest things to get off. And it's, you know, who grabs that middle civilian and then extracts their two close ones, right? Like, those are probably the easiest points. And if you can get the middle one, it means your opponent now needs to get one of your HVTs.
Yeah.
I also just realized that your ITS name is, the ending is very similar to the ending of mine, which I like. So yeah, so just quickly going over mine. So I brought my Charge of the Light Brigade list, which is the Teak B'lung list, which I had made for this mission. One quick disclaimer, in the first two of my games, there was a crucial rules mistake, all of us being new to reinforcements and mixing up some timing, that I'll get to in a moment. So there's definitely an asterisk on my wins, but it was a mistake made by myself, my opponent, and the TO that we have since learnt and will not make again. So my game, I also got to go first. I was playing against Tunguska, which scared me because they are nomads and they are good at hacking. And for those keen-eared listeners out there, you'll notice that my lists rely heavily on a tag and two Montessas, both of them, and have a notable lack of any single hacker. This was a weakness in my list. I knew when I created it and just decided to try and hopefully play around. So my first turn went very well. I focused on the objectives because he was kind of bunkered up. He had a Grenzer missile and a Grenzer sniper, which in my practice game, a Grenzer sniper shut me down the entire game, which is why I put a tag in the list. My first turn, the Montessa in the second group quickly ran, grabbed a civilian, drove it to a console, evacuated him. Then my tag and the second Montessa moved forward, took out both the Grenzers, which I was thankful for. Or actually, it might have just been the missile launcher. I know I took out at least a Grenzer, and then the second group Montessa came forward, grabbed the center civilian, and ran back, but didn't quite help them evacuate. Think I might have gotten another person nearby. I think I got the regular paramedic to grab it from the Montessa, then evacuate it because I had a couple orders, and then kind of set up. So I had the Montessa watching a lane to try and prevent. He had a hollow man with a pitcher, and he also had Mary Problems. So he was kind of watching, I believe, on suppression. Montessa's nearby, kind of providing some looking out, and just hoping to survive. His first turn, he spent most of it. He tried to fight the Montessa, I think did a wound to the close one, and then eventually decided he was running low on orders and just had to go for pitchers, which he could have done first. So he shot out a pitcher with the Hollow Man, and then he landed it pretty much right in the middle of both my Montessas and the Teak B'lung. He then proceeded to start hacking them. He carbonited one of the close Montessa. The back Montessa got hit, but passed arm BTS, failed guts to get out of the range of the repeater. And then after a while, luckily a number of attempts, he eventually was able to possess my Montessa, I believe, on his last order. In the point when he possessed the Montessa, the carbonated Teak B'lung, luckily, not Teak B'lung, carbonated Montessa, luckily, reset, so it was no longer carbonated, but now I had a possessed Teak B'lung in the center of the field. In this whole process, at one point, he did also knock my Sapper Sniper unconscious. So this is where the big mistake that we made came in. Possession is a null state, so for the purposes of being dead, they count as being dead. With a Teak B'lung, in a null state and the Sapper in a null state, that's enough points to trigger reinforcements in my list. The mistake that we made, which we caught a couple days after the event, was the order for calling in reinforcements is at step whatever, I think it's like something point one, you do the executive use of command tokens to move guys between order groups and also remove possession. And then at point two, you actually call in reinforcements. So the mistake that we made was we did not realize it happened. We didn't know that it happened that order. And what we thought I could do was call my reinforcements and then unpossess my tag with a command token, which had bearing on the game. But that is how we played it and played out from there. It then went as well as I hoped it would. My reinforcements came in. They were a tight little duo. ran up, grabbed an HVT after the tag kind of cleared the way and took out a few more of his pieces. My other Montessas ran and grabbed the remaining civilian on my side. So now I was by the end of the turn, essentially, I was up again. My tag's in dangerous places, but I was up with three civilians evacuated and one of his HVTs. His turn, his reinforcements were able to come in, or I think they might have been just not able to. One of the two. He tried to push back. He didn't get anywhere. I think he got one civilian civivac'd, but in my last turn, I was able to knock them out, secure HVT with a guy, and kind of just clear out the remainder of his guys, including his reinforcements. Who had come in and turn two. So it ended up being I think a 6-0 win for me. But again, there's that big asterisk. We mixed up that tag possession order thing. Realistically, my second turn wouldn't have been quite as powerful because those reinforcements wouldn't have come in, because in the situation, I would have chosen to unpossess the tag over bringing in the reinforcements. The salt in the wound was on top of everything. My regular paramedic was able to heal my sapper sniper, so in the end, I didn't lose a single model. So it was brutal. The list worked the way I expected. I think it probably could have kept gone about as well, just even without the reinforcements coming in when they did. It just might have, it would probably would have put getting that HVT a turn back.
Yeah, just delayed it by a little bit.
Yeah. So that was my first. So the next mission we played was Mind Wipe, which is always an interesting one. So which list did you bring? You said you didn't end up bringing your Mind Wipe list. So you ended up bringing
Yeah,
the same
no.
list again?
So I walked up to the table, and just the way it was set up, there was a lot of buildings that I could deploy some toasty, toasty little camo markers that are waiting to fire off rockets.
The totally not no mimetism de lamis.
Yeah. So I thought, you know what? Like, I have McMurrow in my list to go up and whack on a console if I need to. I have the two Fidés, I believe, are double actions.
Yep.
Algebel is not, but I thought, you know what, let's try this list. I liked how it performed in the last match. At least as much the power it gave my units to move. And I realized I have the hacker in there. So I'm gonna just use that list. So I was up against Akari Company, which I was really surprised and excited to see, because Akari is one of those, it's just one of those groups that I look at that I have a love for everything potentially Japanese, and JSA and Akari just call out to me, but I don't think I will ever play them, but they just seem so hard to put everything together and get it to work. There's a lot of, like, I've always noticed there's a lot of really good pieces and great ideas. Side caveat, I was in a 150 point tournament in Kitchener, I think a couple months ago, and I really wanted to bring my all bikes GSA list, which worked out to have so many bikes on the board because I believe it's the Ludwan can also hollow mask as a bike. And I really, really wanted to do it because that would have been my introduction to JSA, but I stayed away from that. So,
The Ludwan can hollow mask as a bike, yeah.
yeah. So it was going to be really, it was going to be really fun, but I gave up on that pretty quickly. But yeah, back to Mind Wipe. So I believe I lost initiative. And my opponent spent a good, I would say, I think all of his orders turn one just trying to deal with the Delamis and Fidés. I lucked out because he had Musashi ready to come tearing down one of the sides. Was it Musashi? No, not
Yojimbo.
Musashi. What's the name? Yojimbo.
Yeah.
That's his name.
Like
And
he will break a console.
he was ready to do a lot, and I just happened to have Aljabel deployed right in front of him. And he moved, Aljabel appeared and shotgun him. And because Aljabel has that nice little continuous damage, it was able to just burn him off the table. So I was thankful for that. Aljabel went down. He did end up coming back later in the game, but not really to do too much more. I think all of my Delamis ended up surviving round one. I spent a good deal of orders bringing McMurder up a side and clearing out a paramedic. I can't really recall too much of what happened in between. I do know that going into turn two, I didn't keep McMurrow where I needed to and tucked him behind. I kind of, again, got a little bit kill happy and wanted him to rampage to the other side of the deployment zone and take out the guys that were standing there. But it was just too strong of an ARO and he went down. And that was something that we talked about at the end of the game, as possibly being the big turning point for me. I brought my link team up a little bit, but not too far. And I had, I can't remember what else I had moving around. The Delamis started, I know turn two, the Delamis just started to go down left, right, and center. Turn three, my Azrael and my Corsan reinforcements came in. At that point in time, he had had a Karakuri on suppression in his back with the link team that was going to be doing some work. Meanwhile, me completely forgetting that his reinforcements can come in and go clear some stuff out. So I did try to get the Azrael to clean up a little bit. He was able to kill, I think, one or two models before the Karakuri put him down. I then tried to drop a four burst chain rifle on the Karakuri. Did not succeed. Karakuri survived every one of the blasts.
Oof.
So it kind of hindered me a bit there. Oh, I have to dial back. My link team did make it up to the console that I had discovered. However, the only person that could do damage to it was my Uber hacker. And when I dropped prone at the end of my turn, thinking I was hidden from his, I think it's a Tanco missile launcher. I thought I was out of line of sight, but he could still see me completely. So he killed him, which was pretty much would have been my last ditch effort for getting to the console. I was able to at the end have my Fide, who I had one Fide left standing, who was still in complete both levels of impersonation. He made a run for it to try to get to that console and take it down. And on the way there, he was discovered and killed. So yeah, I wasn't able to do too much that game. My opponent was able to get down and destroy my console. But that was when post game we talked a little bit about it. And if McMurder had just stayed hidden for a little while, he could have easily just came out and rampaged the console really quickly.
Yeah, he can reliably kill one in one berserk.
He's great for that. But yeah, that was again a hard lesson learned for me that I could have it really could have turned the tide around. If I kept McMurder up there, I wouldn't have had to even move my link team, and I could have kept them to protect the my consoles in the back. So just small things learned from that. I think my experience with Mind Wipe was really, really not too many times. I think I played it once or twice before as well. It's not a mission that I tended to jump to, but I mean, the second I saw it on the list for the tournament, I thought I should definitely at least get a couple reps in on it.
Yeah. No, and it can be a tricky one, especially with those consoles in the middle. My game, I played my Dragao list. I was lucky enough to play against Tunguska for a second time. This time, my opponent went first. He spent the majority of his turn. I had positioned my Dragao and my sniper to stare at his Grenzer sniper, so that he'd try and fight both of them. After a number of orders, he spent a number of orders to get smoke out, and ended up hitting the Dragao. I believe it tanked it safe, fell back, and I believe he took out the sniper. He might have taken my sniper. I can't remember. I know the sniper was revived if it did. But otherwise, his entire first turn was kind of spent pressing the easier of the consoles. The way our map was set up, there was a nice, easy console. Both my Montessas were over there. And then there was one console that was on top of a two-story building. So he took the one that was not on top of the two-story building. And my list, the only real specials I have are two guys on motorcycles that do not like going up two-story buildings. My turn, my Dragao immediately tried to get revenge on the Grenzer. This is the same opponent that I played in my practice game before, where the Grenzer sniper killed everything that I tried to fight it with or get around it with. So the Dragao tried to take a fight. Hit the Grenzer passed its save, and my opponent decided, his exact words were, I'd rather him live, I'm going to fail guts, you can just do what you want. He later said that he regretted making that decision, which at the moment, when he said it, I was like, yes, please let me do what I want. With his one real arrow piece down, my motorcycles just casually drove across the board. One of them went up, pressed the button. Now I had figured out my target console. Both of us had our central consoles as being the targets. Montessas got back on their motorcycle and started going into the enemy lines. Same time, the Dragao kind of pushed up, I think along with a flashbot. He was able to do some fun climb, moving up using large objects that weren't too large to vault up and get a line on Mary Problems and blow her head off. And then kind of stopped a little bit past midway up the board, which I would later come to forget and regret the fact that I forgot that Interventor Lieutenant that he had a Fast Panda, in which I should have kept the Dragao further back with. The Montessas kind of kept moving up, knowing that they'd want to press, by press I mean smash the consoles. Then the next turn, they moved up, caused a bit of damage, just picking off, I think, his missile bot, as well as he had a camoed killer hacker. In the process, the Zon Nautica that had pressed the button also died. But I was in a pretty decent position. In his second turn, he did what I said, which was one of the Montessas went unconscious. The I believe the Interventor died in a shootout with the Dragao. I can't recall exactly. At some point, Grenzer dies. It might have been later. But the main thing was actually he used that Fast Panda, got in range of the Dragao, possessed the Dragao. He had, I think, only an order or so left in the pool when the Dragao got possessed. The Dragao immediately turns around and walks towards my, with line to, I believe, one of my one Montessa that was still conscious, the Sapper Sniper, and then a Brave War Corps, and there was a Fugazi around the corner. The Sapper Sniper... Oh no, he didn't quite get to the Sapper Sniper. So it was he took some shots at my Montessa. He took a shot at the War Corps. The Montessa successfully dodged around the corner. The War Corps hit, and then he failed his armor save, and the Dragao was stunned immediately. At the same time, the Brave Fugazi passed its dodge roll and dodged into engagement with Zhigao. That was the bulk of his turn. Again, we made that same mistake with a Montessa down and the Dragao possess. We made that same mistake thinking that I could do the bring in reinforcements and unpossess the tag. This mission, I think it actually would have mattered less because I actually would have left the tag possessed. It was engaged with a flashbot that was in a position that my opponent couldn't shoot the flashbot. The flashbot was like up against the side of a building and completely blocked by the silhouette of the Dragao. So worst case, the Drow would have he could have activated the Drow, and I would have just, used the ability of stun and CCing to just try to mobilize it. And more importantly, my reinforcements came in, which was the other tag, as well as in this case, Shona Carano. The Montessa, Shona Carano did what she did. She ran up. There was a Cybermine place. She ignored it. She just kind of kept running. I think the tag may have shot something with its attack aware and NCO just because it had while pushing Shona up the board. She jumped off the slightly higher than S2 step that was up to get down to where the console was, moved again, and the console exploded. One of the Montessas then drove by and smashed a non-important console while paramedicing and healing the second Montessa. His third turn, his reinforcements came in. At this point, he didn't really have anything that could destroy the console except for Brand DeCastro, who tried to drop in to destroy my console, but failed the drop. And then he had his reinforcements. His reinforcements made kind of a mad dash run to try and get to my console. It was pretty, there was two, I think the Mars spiders had decharges in his list. It was kind of a running past the line of things, shooting it as he could, but one by one, I believe each of the guys that actually had decharges got stunned. And then just my turn, Shona walked over to the other console and broke it. So it was a pretty solid win. We both agreed afterwards that if his Grenzer had actually stayed up and made me waste more orders with the Dragao fighting it, there's a fair chance that it could have gone differently because I wouldn't have had the orders to have my models press the button and be in position to break his on turn two. And the Grenzer has a real chance of actually just doing real damage to the Dragao. The Dragao's on 15s. The Grenzer, I think, was in a core link, so it was on 17s or something. Like, you have a fair chance, even when you're being out-diced, to do real damage. So.
Yeah, that whole preservation kind of put him back
Yeah,
on that.
sometimes you got to keep those arrows up. Dragao is definitely a scary thing to be facing, but sometimes the delaying of orders, even if you lose a piece like that, is more important than, having them to maybe shoot something on the next turn. And the Grenzer was up on a two-story, like on a high building, so it was fairly predictable to be able to see where he'd be able to see and hide from his gaze, because it would have taken a number of orders to get to reposition him. So, round three, supplies. I'd say the easiest of the three missions of the day, which is nice to have it as the final one.
Yeah, it was definitely the easiest mission to think about on how to achieve. But when I came up with my opponent, I decided, you know what? I haven't played the other list. I'm gonna play the other list. Don't know why I decided that. That was just a let's do this because I made this list, so I want to try it. And it ended up I think it ended up working out in my favor in some regard. Not in every regard. It still became a very difficult match towards the end.
And what was your opponent playing?
Oh my goodness. He was Oh, now I forget. Trying to go through everything he had on the field. I think it was one of the Nomads groups. Might have been Tunguska. It might have been Tunguska.
Okay.
Yeah.
I As I said, a lot of nomads in the meta.
And I had played him at a previous tournament, and his Sally had it had given me a run for my money. That game, he proceeded to step up, step down off of a lot of buildings and just shoot everything off the board almost. I was still relatively new back then.
Oh, do you know what? It was Tunguska. You played my second round opponent.
Oh, yes, I did.
And I played your second round opponent.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. You played against the Akari for the third?
Yes. Yeah. We swapped opponents for the third round.
Just exchanging dance cards.
Yeah.
So I ended up getting, I ended up going first. Deployment wise, my one Fide had really, he had one job to do. And that was just watch one person, the entire time. He had, I can't remember what, it was a sniper that was out, but he was there and just, I didn't know what to do with him. This was one of those matches where I started to run into issues that I had not foreseen on the table. So McMurrow came out and I was like, okay, I'm going to get him to go over and try to trade off with some of the guys in that group that you had set up in the corner. Forgetting that the piece that was standing up on ARO had MSV.
That Grenzer sniper that I was complaining about before.
Yeah. So dropping smoke on a very high amount wasn't going to help me. So I had to try to dodge. And that didn't work so well. He was too far for grenades. McMurrow failed and went down unconscious in the middle of the table. My Ghazi, I figured my Ghazi had to go up and try to take out, I believe it was Mary Problems, his hacker. So my Ghazi tried to make her way up and just kind of was tucked off to a corner. My Link team didn't really do too much. They couldn't really move all that much. So I tried to bring a couple members of it away from sitting on top of a roof. And my first turn was kind of me sitting there going, I don't know what I can do right now.
The Grenzer sniper can do that. I've felt that way against that piece before.
I think the Grenzer sniper saw my, I did have the, did I have the NCO grenade launcher? Is somebody I had. One of my Gulams got shot off pretty quickly. His turn one, I completely forgot that he had guys deployed on the far, from my view, far left side of the table. He had a Zellenkrieger, I believe it was.
Oh, okay.
Or, I think it was a Zellenkrieger and then something else. And it, like, the Zellenkrieger came running down. Oh, and this one we had the QAZ creatures, correct?
Yes, we had the Quasi creatures.
Yeah, so I remember the reason I ran McMurrow the way I ran him was to try to kill the Quasi creature.
Yeah.
Because the Quasi creature was also sitting within the zone of control of my entire, like, Yara and the rest of that Link team. So if they activated, they were just going to eat a lot of hits. So McMurrow had to clean that up. That's why I placed McMurrow and kind of ran him the way I did. Again, in hindsight, I should have ran him straight across the board instead of towards the guy with the
MSV.
So my Link team really couldn't do too much. I believe turn one, he was able to move up and kill a few of my pieces. I think he put me just out of reach for reinforcements. I can't recall. I think my turn two, my Asawira was able to sneak up with my I believe I had a hacker in that list, and it was my, yeah, because I did have a
Buried.
My Buried was able to go up to one of the supply boxes and take that out and run it back. Then what else happened? I think Yara was able to kind of stand up and peek a few guys and shoot some stuff off the table. But the most important thing that happened turn two was my Fide, because I completely forgot the entire time his guys were moving that my Fide was standing there staring at him. which I think is what saved the game for me. My Fidei was able to climb down off the roof unseen or unchallenged and then walk over to his lieutenant hiding in the back row and assassinate him.
Yeah. So it's always a weakness of the Nomads without chain of command, and especially Tengusu with the obvious interventor lieutenant.
Yeah. So that was my big saving grace, was really taking away his ability to just have people move together.
Mm-hmm.
When I brought my reinforcements in, their main idea was to just step in and try to clear out as much of the group that was standing in the center and then stand there waiting for his reinforcements to come in as well.
Mm-hmm.
I believe my Bukhtar was able to step on the table and get my classified where his HVT was standing. I couldn't do it originally because Mary Problems was standing relatively close to the HVT, and I needed to take care of her first because I didn't want my Bukhtar to walk on and just get destroyed the second he steps on the table. So I was able to get that. I had one supply box, and I think before my turn was over, because I think turn two, he was able to grab a supply box and retreat back. My Fidei and my Bukhtar were able to take care of the guy that had his supply box down there and run it back into the corner. And his turn three, he wasn't able to get up to get the supply box away from the Bukhtar, but his Zellenkrieger had enough space to step out and demo my Bereed that was holding on to one of the boxes. So that was a good thing for him there. And I believe he was also able to bring a bot in to grab another supply. I did get McMurrow up at some point in time to kind of stand in the middle of the table again. I didn't really give him any orders. He was standing close enough to the one supply box that I thought he was going to do more work, but he didn't really do too much. But I think between the classified and by being able to get his supply crate from him and run it over to the corner, I was able to get the points I needed for that round.
Yeah, I think it looks like you ended up with pulling out a 3-2, just getting the win.
Yeah, that classified saved me.
Yeah, I find supplies can often come down to that, one of the classifieds. Just quickly going through mine, I went back to that first list with the Teak Long, because the Montessa in each group is fantastic for just efficient grabbing of supply boxes. I got to go first. My opponent and I both put our Quasi creatures. I know they're QAZ, I just call them Quasi, because I agree with people that say that's the correct way. Because Quasi Cupcakes, Quasi Creatures.
Yeah, makes sense.
There was this nice building in the middle of the map, pretty much, or just offset from the middle, that you could put a Quasi Creature at, where your opponent couldn't see it, but it could cover two of the supply boxes. So we both put our Quasi Creatures on other opposite sides of this building. So I started my Teak Belong and Montessa duo, started moving up. The Montessa moved up, fought the Quasi creature. The Teak Belong moved up, fought his Tanko. I believe I got just inside of 24, was able to fight the Tanko, knock them unconscious. Montessa then moved up towards the supply boxes, faced the Quasi creature. The Quasi creature successfully passed its saves against the Montessa. The Montessa then moved out towards the central supply box, at which point he revealed his hidden deployed ninja hacker. I reset against the hacker and just tanked the, tried to hope to just tank or the Quasi creature saves. This was a mistake. The Quasi creature just immediately knocked the Montessa unconscious because damage 13 AP, burst 3, even if you hit on 11, still does a lot of damage. So I brought my second group Montessa then up. It ran up to the other side of the building, dispatched the Quasi creature, moved to about the edge of the hacker's zone of control, and then dodged, and then the next order moved around to see the hacker and successfully killed it with a shotgun. The Montessa then grabbed my rightmost supply box. Again, thankful, I think between O12 Prestige and the fact that motorcycles are fast, it quickly grabbed it, started driving back. The Teak Balon grabbed the supply box from the Montessa. That Montessa then grabbed the central supply box and drove away. Just hiding behind some crates just outside my deployment zone. And the Teak Balon kind of set up centrally along that central building. I think tried to take some shots with someone. His turn, he did end up knocking the Teak Balon. Oh, also when the second Montessa drove up, it tried to heal the first Montessa, who failed his fizz roll and died. I think he rolled a 20. Which was the first model that I failed to heal all tournament, so I could not complain in the slightest. In his turn, he was able to knock the Teak Balon unconscious using his Bounty Hunter with Red Fury that had rolled up mid minus six. He pushed Yojimbo up centrally and took out my crazy creature. And he did make the mistake when he was driving up. He threw out a crazy koala, and then he drove up into range of the crazy creature and fought it, which I was happy to do because the crazy creature AO'd, which also triggered the koala. So I didn't need to worry about the koala in my turn.
Perfect.
So that's pretty much what he did in his turn. He also healed his Tanko missile launcher back up. But because he had taken out my Teak Balon and I lost a Montessa, this time, legally, my reinforcements yet again came in turn two. Yes. So my secondary tag and my engineer landed, the engineer landing in base contact with the Teak Balon, who he immediately healed. I was then able to... this one supply box was still on the ground there. The Squalos Mark II took out the Tanko for real this time. The Teak Balon took out, I believe, the Red Fury and I believe his Bounty Hunter Sniper. The surviving Montessa... my Warcore grabbed the supply blocks off of my Montessa. And then my Montessa proceeded to then drive to the third supply box, killed Yojimbo by fighting him from combat. Yojimbo nanopulsed, not, I think, recognizing that I had two wounds in BTS-6. So after a back and forth, he died. I grabbed the third supply box, and the Montessa once again drove away back into my deployment zone and hid. I think the Teak Balon then picked up the supply box, ran back into my deployment zone, up onto a building. One of my regulars grabbed it from the Teak Balon. The Teak Balon then went back down the building and back to where he had been when he originally got shot and killed. Or somewhere else. Essentially somewhere else watching. My opponent, I think, ended up hacking my Teak Balon with a pitcher from his Druze and the hacker, his Druze killer hacker, and the hacker that came in from his reinforcements. And the Teak Balon did end up going unconscious again. My final turn, it was pretty much cleanup. My Montessa drove from the left side of my deployment zone to the right side of my deployment zone, killing the Druze's pitcher on the way. I believe one of the supply boxes, I think one of my Fugazis grabbed the supply box from the Warcore and also drove it to my back right corner. And then my Squalos with the repeater gun just moved forward, and then got some horizontal shots across and killed off, his hacker and I think a couple of his reinforcements. And in his last turn, he didn't really have anything to do. So it was pretty efficient. It's what the Montessas can do in that mission. If you have the tags to put heads down, they are very reliable at grabbing the objectives and running away. And they have that nice extra durability where they can run out and grab one and be like, okay, fine, you can take a shot at me. I have mimetism. I have arm 4, arm 7 when I'm in cover. And do their thing. So it was successful. It was another major win for me. This time without an asterisk because the tag was actually knocked unconscious. But yeah, so that was the event. I think you and I end up coming first. You came third.
Yes.
So overall, a good time. So now, in hindsight, after the event, what were your thoughts about how the event went, things you might have done differently, and how do you feel about reinforcements, having now played it in, a tournament setting?
Event-wise, I enjoyed the event quite a bit. I think the mixture of missions, kind of depending on what you were bringing, it led to a you're not really going to bring one list to play all three. You can, but it gives you the opportunity to flavor it in different ways. For reinforcements in particular, I'd really like to see more work done with reinforcements from the CB side of things. And it's not to say that I don't like reinforcements, because I like the idea of this group of guys dropping in on the field to kind of support you. But I think that it's, how would I put this? I think that the groups that come in on the field really should have started from something that was just models that I wouldn't say that aren't all that have to already be available, but I mean, there's a lot of models that can do the job of what's coming in without giving some brand new flavor to everything. For example, Squalos Mark II, awesome, but could you have flavored it a little bit differently? In my case, looking at my reinforcements, what I dropped on the table, two out of the four models were current. I wouldn't say current. They're models that exist. They already were part of everything. Adding in the addition of the Corsans, yeah, it's cool to add this model that has a linkable already plus two burst, bringing it up to four burst chain rifle or a three burst grenade. Super cool, like awesome to stack that mechanic, but I mean, let's flush out what's already there. Let's cut these extra models, maybe put one extra model or something like that. The other idea is, like, even looking at armies like Yu Qing, because that's my heritage in the game. Like, oh, those are some really sweet models you brought out, but they don't transfer into anything else.
Yeah,
Why
I'm
not?
hoping that changes. I'm hoping that after some time they incorporate them, especially for the Yu Jing. I'd love if they incorporate them into White
Oh
Banner.
yeah. They seem very much like they'll fit in White Banner. I know some people have said, oh, they could be their own sectorial, but I don't think there'd be a point to that. Really keep them going there. But like along the lines of what I was thinking is, you know what? Yu Qing has needed an ISS rework for a while.
Yeah. Oh, I agree. ISS was my second army in the game and I love them, but they definitely feel they have that outdated feel.
Yeah, and I mean
They
like
they're like one or
that.
two tools or changes, I think, away from greatness. But
You're not unplayable,
they
but
were designed for a meta that did not have the hacking and armor of modern Infinity.
100% agree with that. And I mean that's I mean, who knows? CB.
Nope, lost you again.
I think it
Oh,
might
we
be
lost you
Lemuria.
there for a second. There.
Am I back again?
Yep, you are back.
Yeah, it might be when my phone locks up or something like that.
Okay. No worries. We got you back.
Okay. I think really that CB can do a lot more with reinforcements still, and I hope that they don't take the lack of interest in reinforcements as like an indication that okay, we're gonna just stop looking at this mode. We're just gonna take all of the pieces we have and drop them into groups and then forget about reinforcements as a game mode. Because I think there is something to be had there. It needs to be fleshed out a bit more. And as a community, like, I think as much as we might think, hey, this needs work, we're not going to touch it, it's on us to really figure out what the things are and go back to CB, because who knows the game better than us, really, right?
Yeah.
We run a tournament here and give them that data. Even us talking about it on this podcast, it gives them a little bit of feedback. And the more people go into it and play with it a bit, the more we're going to get the really valid criticisms and critiques of it.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing I will say is at the tournament, I did hear a lot of feedback from people that had a negative experience with it, that I think the one thing that I've heard multiple times is, well, I mean, you have this group that can drop on the table and rampage to like an objective point, or rampage to someone holding a supply box and change the game. And my one thing I see about that is, yeah, it's a new way to play. And if we need to think mechanically, how do you stop that? Do you either hide your group better, or mm-hmm. do you set up a stronger ARO knowing that can come in?
Yep.
Because a lot of times that's how the game seems to play out, is that, oh, I got my reinforcements. My reinforcement is going to go do something. But I'm not keeping it in the back of my head that, well, now my opponent's going to deploy reinforcements and they're now going to have a counter. And if I don't set up for that counter, I've just opened up my back line. I've opened up objectives. I've opened up all these things. So it's an idea that you still need to have, that idea that there, that thought that there's going to be some counter to whatever you're doing, because they're coming in with an equal force.
Yeah. For me, I agree. I like the idea of reinforcements, and I feel like it's almost there, and I agree that I hope they don't, you know, abandon it. The coming in, I almost wonder if the initial thing that they talked about with, you know, it comes that coming in at 50 points would work better. I feel like in a lot of games, outside of doing, you know, weird things, like I intentionally built my lists to make it so I would likely get reinforcements round two, because likely I'd lose a model plus attack, right? Like if I'm playing my attack aggressively, that's a fair chance that I'm going to be able to get my reinforcements turn two. Mm-hmm. But outside of building with that mindset, right, a lot of people, it sounded like from the event, most of the times got their reinforcements round three, unless, yep. you know, their opponent was just completely running through them. And like, that's fine. Like if that's how it is, but there's a trend in a lot of ITS missions I find to be a lot more order intensive. And if you are running reinforcements, as I think generally they're intended, which is, you know, 4 to 5 models in the reinforcement pool, not, you know, 2 like I did. If you're running 4 to 5 models in your pool, most factions, you know, you might get a comlink plus one. Some of all the NA2 only don't even get a comlink plus one. You know, now that's 4 or 5 models and 4 to 5 orders that you don't have on the field doing orders for 2 turns. And if you aren't doing some of these missions for 2 turns, it can be really hard to get them done. And a single strong arrow piece like a Grenzer sniper or, you know, an Atalanta, something that you can't really deal with or will take orders to deal with, really stalls you out. And I wonder if, you know, making reinforcements easier to get in or get them in sooner would maybe help. The other thing is, you know, the comlinks are nice, but if you, in terms of getting that extra model, but realistically, you're getting an extra model from a comlink, but then the comlink guy, other than maybe being a fifth man in a order pool, in a fire team, isn't doing much. They're specialists, but usually they're very expensive. They cost, I think, SWC for most people. So I feel like that comlink tax also is a big sore spot for a lot of people. And I think either if they could make it more interesting or give more options, or honestly, if the comlink just didn't cost, I think it works out that the comlink costs like 10 points, which makes then, you know, sure, you're building with 250, but you have this mandatory 20 plus point model that you have to bring, finds it a bit limiting. So I agree. I want them to keep doing reinforcements. I know, you know, in its current state, I don't think locally we're going to be playing it. You know, we definitely aren't going to be playing it every time. We'll probably play it, you know, maybe once a year, I think, at this point. Maybe some, like, random local games. But for tournaments, I know the general discussion seems to be, and the feeling was, you know, in its current state, there isn't much desire to play a bunch, you know, a lot of tournaments with it, which is disappointing because some of those new models look sweet. Mars, I don't play Nomads, and I'm trying to figure out what I want to proxy those Mars spiders as because they just look so cool.
Yeah, and I moved away from Yujing for the season, but I picked up the Yujing reinforcements and the Heitei, and just like I want to play them.
So we'll see. Hopefully, I'm sure they're listening. For those that are listening and don't know, I know there is a fairly long thread. I think it's in the rules section of the Infinity forums. I know a lot of people avoid the forums, but I know there's a running thread on reinforcements, people giving back their feedback, and it seems
Cool.
like it's being heavily moderated. Like they're actually keeping an eye on it to try and keep it from becoming toxic and actually being a productive feedback source. So if you play reinforcements, if you have feedback, I recommend putting it there. We know we're lucky to play a game where we know that Corvus Belli does actually, you know, engage with the community and listen. And, you know, other games, that's not the case. So I think if we can use those resources and give them the feedback, I think, you know, it's a good idea. And hopefully it works out for the better for the game.
Now, I just had a really random thought, but do you think that the introduction of resilience operations is gonna interfere with the community's will to play test reinforcements?
It is interesting, both at the same time. I definitely think I'm more excited to play Resilience, mainly because Resilience is also a break from the normal ITS. I don't know if it will. I think people will probably be doing both. I think right now the biggest thing for Resilience is people getting access to the cards. We're lucky, you know, like locally, our local store got a big box of them in, so we all have the cards. But it might a bit. I think if people are like, let's try something new, right now Resilience will probably take precedent, but I'm still not 100% sure, you know, what is running a tournament with Resilience like, right? When Resilience ops, you know, the mission's random each time, so you know, there's not a set of here are the missions for the tournament. Say we're playing, you know, you're just going to play three different Resilience games against three different opponents or five, right? So it'll be interesting to see how that actually feels in a tournament setting. But I think that's just another thing to try. And again, I'm sure we'll get feedback from there. I don't know if there's a forum post on that, but yeah, I hope people keep trying both. It might delay them a bit.
Yeah, like I'm really interested to play Resilience. And I mean, I don't see why the community would just marry the two. And I mean, we play a lot of games where it's just our own locals and our own groups of friends that are playing. And if you want to try to put both together, sure. I know I've heard quite a few podcasts talk about if how they would run an event with Resilience and not yes, Resilience. And I think that it would be really interesting because we already go through this idea of okay, we know what the missions are, we're catering our lists to that. Whereas now it's you have no idea what these three missions will be. You need two lists that can do pretty much anything, or one list. If that's the way you'd play, I'm gonna bring one list. I know how this list plays. It's gonna do 90% of what, or 100% even, or even only 50% of what comes through resilience. Let's go to the tournament with that. I think that would be interesting to see. That's something I'd like to see someone take on for a tournament. And I know it'd be a pretty big undertaking because I'm not sure. I haven't played Resilience yet, but I'm pretty sure board setup is it takes time. But I think is it the same setup for everything and then you remove? what
Yeah,
cards are drawn, or
so my understanding, you don't remove. It's kind of like extra steps of setting like tokens up, right? Like it, I think it's, can't remember the exact number. I think it's like four. It's like two. Is it like two consoles, three objectives, and four HVTs or something like that? I can't remember the exact numbers, but it's like essentially each person has to set up, I think, seven or eight or nine or something of their own like things. But realistically, like I don't think that adds that much setup time. If you think about it, it's probably not much more setup time than the going around and setting up the objectives for a mission, right? Where you actually have to measure, okay, now we're playing supplies, someone go set up the supply beacons. Those have to be carefully measured,
Yeah.
whereas these, it's where the players play it within like bands. The interesting thing for me with it is ITS, there seems to be a growing trend in, especially the three new ITS missions, that you really need specialists, and you need either specialists that are going to survive or specialists that, like, enough spec, a lot of specialists. The operation mission, you don't really need specialists, right?
Interesting.
It's like, I'm pretty sure for like most of the things with buttons, though, I don't think there is specialist requirements, which means that you get to play with, some of those fa
Whatever.
like I'm much more excited to play ISS in that, because
Yeah.
now I can lean into, okay, not needing specialists as much. Or, when I'm drawing my missions, you draw, I think it's you draw three, pick, draw four, pick three, and there's a command token to redraw. Maybe I lean into the securing zone missions more, right? I try and lean into the missions that I don't really need specialists, so I can focus more on, shoving multiple Sujons down people's throats. So it'll be interesting to see. I'm definitely excited to try it. My next project is not getting my ISS painted, which was supposed to be painted for Winter War, but I could not end up going, so I stopped painting. I have my next project is Starco, which I'm going to try and get painted for January, which will be tough. But yeah, that I think that's kind of my thoughts on reinforcements and, I guess, broader missions and operations in the landscape of Infinity. Do you have any other final thoughts or shout outs you want to make, or both?
Honestly, final thoughts. I hope everyone that listens to this that hasn't at least tried one match with reinforcements goes out and just plays a match. Love it or hate it, it'll give you that action. You'll get that play opinion on it rather than just what everyone has said. Because I mean, my experience from reinforcements versus your experience from reinforcements versus everyone else at that tournament or anyone else really is it's going to change from person to person and from meta to meta and table to table. So really going out and trying it at least once. Yeah. I really urge that. And definitely a big shout out to the community at Sword and Board for putting on these awesome events. I do love traveling for events and the traveling to Sword and Board and being part of the Toronto community. It's a lot of fun. It's interesting because the meta changes everywhere I've been. And like I would say the Tackleware tournaments are good to get a nice blend of that, but I spend time playing guys here in Stratford. I've played a couple of the London guys. I go down to Kitchener and I play, and I've even I participated in an escalation league at Torchlight. And it's just every single spot, it's a little bit different. You get to experience something different. And really, like, I'm glad that there are places that are running regular tournaments. It keeps the community going. It brings people from all over together. So really big shout out to Sword and Board for running those.
Yeah, it's great. For anyone interested in the Toronto area, or willing to go to Toronto, the next event is January 21st, which is a Sunday, and it is continuing the trying the new things. So it's the Mercenary Contract Extra, which is an extra, and then it's BPong Unmasking and Last Launch. So Should be fun. Hopefully we'll see you there. And yeah, thanks for coming on, Greg, and thank you all for listening. This has been the WIP 12 podcast.